move on to the fourth case of the day, number 10-2895, United States versus Rago. And we'll hear from Ms. Winslow.
Good morning to the court and counsel. The Speedy Trial Act allows for reasonable exclusions of time for counsel to prepare, for plea negotiations, and for other exclusions necessary for the ends of justice. The Speedy Trial Act is not, however, a license for counsel to put cases on the back shelf and allow prosecutions to drag on for years. Nor does the Act give the parties permission to simply exclude time over and over again under the guise of filing motions or conducting plea negotiations when neither is being undertaken. Yet that's what occurred in Ms. Rago's case. In this instance, in this particular case, there's four periods of excluded time, and we'll agree with the government's calculation of 136 days as opposed to the 137 days that we previously stated. But in either case, it's significantly over the 70 days allowed by the Speedy Trial Act accepting approved exclusions of time. Beginning with the June 14th through 18th, 2008 time exclusion, time was excluded for the filings of motions. However, during this period, this latter period of the excluded time, no motions were filed. Thus, under the Supreme Court's current jurisprudence, that time should not have been excluded for the filing of pretrial motions. There's no basis on the record for the court's later finding that counsel needed that time to review discovery. Actually, what the record reflects is that, again, on August 1st, 2008, counsel stated that he still needed time to review discovery. Thus, it's clear that during this period of time, no discovery was being reviewed. That was simply
by the defense counsel.
By defense counsel, Judge. That's correct. Well, there's no finding that the government needed that period of time.
No.
This period of this case dates back to tax filings. Of course, the amended filings were filed later, but the original filing years was 1999 and 2000. So we're talking about a case that had been under investigation for a substantial period of time. In fact,
right, but weren't all these continuances requested by the defense?
They were not all requested by the defense. As I understand, moving on to the next two series of continuances, at least one of those was requested by the prosecutor, by the assistant who was handling the case below. And those were the continuances requested by telephone call. I was not counsel at this point. So my prior counsel, my predecessor at that time, stated that he received a call from the assistant who was handling the case at the matter. And as he states in the hearing before Judge Anderson, that it's his practice to agree to an exclusion of time and to agree to a continuance over the telephone with the courtroom deputy. The problem with that, Judge, to the court, is that no contemporaneous findings of the necessity for the exclusion of time are made when time is excluded pursuant to a phone call to a courtroom deputy. In this particular instance, again, the August 1st...
Although we have an order from the court, though...
We do, Judge. We have an order, a minute order, that was actually entered by the courtroom deputy, and no record for this court to review or any further court to review that any contemporaneous findings were made.
Presumably that order was issued with the judge's authority.
One would hope. But nonetheless, what we don't have in that order, and I will allow for that, but what we still don't have in that order is contemporaneous factual findings for the necessity of the exclusion of time.
Are those required in writing at that time under our precedent?
Judge, they're not required in writing, but they are required, very clearly required, to at least be in the judge's mind at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to address that particular instance, a particular consideration in the context of this case, because looking at the record as a whole, it's clear that the justifications offered by the district court when the later motion for dismissal under the Speedy Trial Act was considered, it clearly shows that, once again, from October 1st, 2008 to September 3rd, 2008, the ends of justice explanation or ends of justice rationale was given because, again, defense counsel needed additional time to review discovery. This case took 2 days to try, Judge. because I was trial counsel. It took 2 days to try. The discovery overall was very limited in this case. So based on the record as a whole, and based on what we now know and what this court has to review, there is no basis for finding that that additional period of time was justified under the ends of justice.
Well, what's a district judge supposed to do when the defense attorney hasn't done what he or she needs to do to prepare for trial?
I believe that what the district court is supposed to do is instruct defense counsel that they need to do that within a reasonable period of time, and defense counsel needs to make statements on the record to allow for judicial findings that the exclusion of time is necessary, not just simply convenient.
Necessary, convenient, ends of justice with the choice of facing a 2255 petition after a conviction that says my lawyer didn't do a sufficient job of preparing.
Well, Judge, if that were the case, if defense counsel were to come in and say, Your Honor, this is a complex case. There are X number...
It's not a complex case. I'm not ready. If the defense counsel just says that.
Well, then I think that
I've been busy. So.
Well, that's not a permissible basis under the Speedy Trial Act to exclude time. Simply, I don't have time for this case is not a permissible basis.
Okay, so what does the judge do? Replace the lawyer?
Well,
that's going to delay things even more.
In fact,
right?
It did.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, it did in this case.
That doesn't seem to help the speedy trial matters, even if it winds up producing a better process overall.
Well, I think the process overall is what the court is asked to look at in this case. And you're absolutely right, Your Honor. And in fact, previous counsel was replaced, and we did have an additional delay of another four months.
You replaced him, I guess. Is that right?
Pardon me?
Were you the replacement?
I was.
So you were appointed, and then you come in cold, and you have to find out how simple this case is.
Correct. Correct. In a word.
That might take some time.
Only it took 4 months. But the basis of the exclusion of time was made on the record and pursuant to judicial findings. When I came in and I took over the case, I had some matters that were already scheduled to go to trial. I had a trip out of the country, and the judge made specific findings that for continuity of counsel and in order to allow me adequate time to prepare, also for the consideration of pretrial motions, because there was a pending motion to dismiss under the Speedy Trial Act, the time was properly excludable. The problem with the district court's findings in the previous exclusions of time is that they're not based on any contemporaneous findings of fact, or I suppose I should say, with respect to Judge Hamilton's question, there's no facts stated on the record from which the judge could have made up his mind at that period of time. In fact, because there's no statements on the record at all as to what was said during the telephone call, there's no way for this court to evaluate whether there was sufficient basis for an ends of justice exclusion.
In hindsight, when you showed up, from that time forward, we will take that out of the picture. Going back all the way, is it you're finding it exceeds the 70 days that there's a lot of time that should not have been excludable?
There is. It is. That is my conclusion.
That's what you're
Judge.
Doing.
And
right.
I think it's difficult as one defense attorney to another defense attorney to argue that because right. Obviously we are all busy. But very briefly, in answer to your judge's question, I would point to the October 9th, 2008 to December 11th, 2008 period of time that was excluded. That was retroactively excluded for plea negotiations. I stated in my brief, perhaps it's based on my representation of her, that Ms. Rego was never going to enter into a plea agreement. There's a certain...
I've heard that from a lot of folks who later pled, and I'm sure you've heard that too. So.
And that's right. But I would point to another fact that's on that the government actually points out in its brief, and that is that prior defense counsel states that as of December 3rd, 2009, the parties had plea discussions for approximately 1 month. So that doesn't explain what happened to October. It wouldn't explain why the additional 2 months was necessary when, in fact, plea negotiations were not ongoing during this period of time. If the court has no further questions, I will reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Winslow. For the government, Mr. Stedler.
May it please the Court. My name is Chris Stetler, and I represent the United States. The District Court did not err in excluding the four periods of time at issue here. The District Court articulated its findings both in court and in a written opinion, and it based its ruling on factual findings that were fully supported by the record, not clearly erroneous, as the defendant argues. And unless there are any questions from the panel, I would ask that this court affirm the District Court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stetler. Ms. Winslow, a little more time?
It's again our position that the after-the-fact justification stated on the record as they were insufficient. We would ask that Your Honor reverse this case and remand for a new trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the case is taken under advisement.